conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin, you're listening to Up North News.
Well, here we are. Good morning. It's Wednesday, the third day of August. Welcome to Wisconsin's new coffee break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Nice to have you here. Later this morning, Kirk Bangsted and Kristen Lyerly will help me co-host the 10 o'clock hour, as they will on several Wednesdays moving forward. And we are scheduled to talk at that hour to Jillian Bettino, candidate for state treasurer. We can now share with you the news that Senator Tammy Baldwin will join us here in the 8 o'clock hour tomorrow morning. Luke Mathers is our producer. Later on, I will gross him out with a follow-up on the escapades of my knee, the one that now has a cane next to my chair here. But again, we'll get to that later. The Brewers started strong in Pittsburgh last night. Then they falter 5-3 on the plus side, we hope. We get Freddy Peralta back tonight, who's been out with a shoulder injury since May 22nd. So we're hopefully getting back on track as players return from the injury list. But we're going to begin this hour with community action and the people that I love.
Citizen action.
Democracy's little helpers. We actually used that headline in mid-May on an Up North news story about how the people who normally work on specific policy issues, like a conservation group, for example, have to take time away from their core issue in order to help voters understand that something even larger is at stake right now, and that's democracy itself. One of the groups that has been trying to help inform voters on specific issues and getting them involved is Citizen Action. And, you know, they will talk about bringing people together to make Wisconsin a better place to live and work. They use what's called an integrated strategy of grassroots organizing, educational programming, earned media, civic engagement, and political lobbying to advance progressive solutions. And as if that weren't enough, they have a new ad coming out, and it's not every day you get a member of Congress to voice your ad against a member of the state's congressional delegation. So to talk to us about that and much more is Robert Craig from Citizen Action. Robert, good morning to you.
Good morning, Pat. Always good to be with you. And thanks for all of your service up north.
You bet. And I will say that Robert helped provide some of the inspiration for this program, in that Citizen Action started a podcast, a weekly podcast called Battleground Wisconsin, some time back. Found it to be something that was long needed in the state in terms of a week in review with guests. And, you know, since that time, Up North News has come on board. The Wisconsin Examiner has come on board. There's plenty of room for entities that are talking to people about things that aren't simply legacy media outlets or right-wing outlets. And so, Robert, I don't know the genesis of the podcast or more about your activities, but, you know, your name is on the letterhead, so I guess I get to tip my cap to you.
Well, the podcast, Battleground Wisconsin podcast, it's still weekly, still has a dedicated audience, including Pat. Mm-hmm. And we started it during the uprising in 2011 over Act 10, and have kept it up every week ever since. But it was at the height of the protest that we thought there needed to be more specifically progressive pro-labor communications. I think, Pat, that the decline of legacy media, I mean, newspapers are just dying all over the country and the state, has created a lot of space. We know that the right has created its own echo chamber, so you don't have to know the facts if you watch Fox News or Newsmax or InfoWars or any of the right-wing sources. But progressive media has also flourished, and specifically progressive media. But of course, we're actually interested in facts and interested in conversation, discussion, and differences, and finding a consensus. So I see what Up North News does, Wisconsin Examiner, and that we use a lot of the reporting from Up North News and Wisconsin Examiner and other nonprofit. Wisconsin Public Radio is nonprofit media, not for-profit media, right? On Battleground Wisconsin. So I think that the whole media ecosystem has changed dramatically, and just that you can land Tammy Baldwin for this show tells you how much things have changed, Pat.
It has. And I appreciate that. And it, a lot of people have put in work for, like you said, well over a decade now to help change the, you know, the media ecosystem here in Wisconsin with what had been very limited choices. Let's move away from the media end of it and back to Citizen Action overall in the, you know, the 1 minute or so that we have before we go to break. And then we'll talk much more about it. But when you introduce Citizen Action overall as a concept to somebody who has never heard of it at all, what's your 1 minute explanation of what it is and what it does in Wisconsin?
Well, we are a statewide grassroots membership organization. So unlike many of the organizations, you know, we actually have members in chapters. We call it organizing co-opters across the state, but we also have, for Wisconsin, roughly large staff of organizers and program leaders. And we are much more statewide than most groups. I mean, people try to communicate statewide, but they don't have boots on the ground, including our members and our staff. We have staff around the state, but we actually try to, I know we're going to break, but bridge the gap. You talked about groups taking time off from their issues to do elections. We work on issues in a way that they become electoral issues. So we're doing the same issue work in elections as in the legislative session, because they're both cycles of the same idea of building power to actually make social change.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what part of where we're going to pick things up after the break here is that, you know, there are candidates, there are political parties, there are single issue groups, and then there are groups that are much more encompassing, but dedicated to a certain ideal of how democracy works best. Robert Craig from Citizen Action is our guest. More in just a moment. This is Up North News.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to Up North News. You can get our daily newsletter by signing up at upnorthnewswi.com. Weather, scattered thunderstorms will continue to move across Wisconsin during the morning and afternoon. There were certainly some loud ones all across northern Wisconsin overnight. Still going to be warm and humid. In other words, August in Wisconsin. What more do you, it's like that short time when I lived in the Cayman Islands, Robert, and worked at the TV station there, and they had me doing the weather, not because I was a meteorologist, but because how tough is it to say it's going to be sunny in 85 today? And that's pretty much what we've got going on here. To email the show, radio at upnorthnewswi.com, and our phone number here is 715-388-7155. Again, Robert Craig from Citizen Action. We're talking a bit about democracy's little helpers and the overview that you do. So getting back to, you know, what Citizen Action is, I like to use the word conversation through, you know, canvassing is more of a political term, you know, the door knocking and the holding of meetings and everything. But really, I kind of envision more that you're doing real people conversations involving, you know, real local people, not those who necessarily parachute in. You know, parties can do so much, candidates can only do so much, but a group like yours operates year round with issues that you pick as a priority. How does that whole model of local conversations work best for Citizen Action?
Yeah, and I think the parachuting in concept is one of the main reasons Democrats as a whole, not just the party itself, but all the people who are on that side of the political spectrum. So the whole coalition between the left and center, that is Democratic Party, that's one of our weaknesses, because a lot of national groups just try to parachute into a Wisconsin. If they arrive in a Wausau and start talking to you with, you know, people they just hired off a college campus in California, New York, that's not as persuasive as people from that community talking to them and going door to door and understanding how folks think and talk about and talking about local and understands local issues. And so, unfortunately, because we're such a battleground state, some of those parachute groups become competition for us for resources. I mean, we do say, look, you'd be better off investing in existing organizations that already have grassroots capacity and ramping up their capacity in a critical election, like will go determine the balance of power in the U.S. Senate, potentially, with the Ron Johnson-Mandela Barnes race and the presidential race in 2024, as we did in 2000, in 2020, and in 2000, actually. And so it is very different. I like your analogy to a conversation, Pat. I mean, even our canvassing, because we do both volunteer canvasses and we have a field team that is paid canvassers and they're on the phone, we use a deep canvas model. It's a longer conversation where we're actually working through issues with a voter. And we might actually, we would actually talk to a voter who both is desperate for healthcare, but somehow feel has been convinced by right-wing media that there's some threat from immigrants, right? And we work through that in order to basically defang the right-wing argument and show them that that's just used by the powers that be, by the healthcare industry, to divide us so that you can never get healthcare, as is your fundamental right. And so they can commodify it, the insurance companies, big pharma, et cetera. And with we were showed in 2020, and with our national network that we're a part of, People's Action, that that moves a lot of voters. There are some voters who are so close, they listen to Tucker Carlson, that they won't move, and those conversations end quickly. They start insulting the canvasser. But there are others that are what we call cross-pressured. So, Pat, the whole concept of swing voter is a misnomer. They're cross-pressured. They both arguments from our side and the other side appeal to them. And the side that wins is the one that works out, that resolves that tension or conflict. And we have another narrative. The narrative is that racial division, the rural-urban divide, that those are ginned up by conservatives to prevent us from having the power we need to get what average working people need. And that is a very appealing message to a lot of people who would otherwise vote the wrong way, in our perspective, Pat.
To get to those conversations, again, those conversations can help overcome the things on a two-dimensional TV screen or a computer screen or what have you. And I know, as somebody who has canvassed and has, you know, knocked on thousands of doors myself as a candidate, that it truly is one of the best parts of the job. It has moments where it's a terrible part of the job, but they still, in my mind, they are still few and far between. But I think for folks who let's say their door has never been, you know, knocked on by a canvasser, not a candidate, because, you know, maybe they've had that, but by a canvasser, what does that person first encounter? What is the opening of a canvasser to start that conversation about a particular issue?
Well, we work out a very detailed kind of agenda for each situation. So it depends, right? Like we're trying to generate our volunteer members across the state to come out and get out the vote for the primary. Frankly, we thought it was going to be to determine who would be the nominee for U.S. Senate, but since the field has been cleared and our endorsed candidate Mandela Barnes will be the nominee, this is more about some primaries we're interested in, but it's also about building up that grassroots army for the big fight in the general election and the tens of millions that'll come in for Ron Johnson of all of that dirty, dark money and billionaire money. And so it's adjusted, but we figure out what is the way into a conversation. It also depends on, we do use all of the advanced tools of communication and voter targeting. So if we are talking to cross-pressured voters, the entryway is different, cross-pressured being they're available to their side and our side for their arguments, versus drop-off voters who are with us but may not vote, especially in a midterm election. And that's a very different conversation. The second group, you have to show them that voting for progressive and Democrat candidates actually would make a meaningful difference in their lives. And that's a threat to democracy as well, that so many people think it doesn't make a difference. And the gridlock in government has helped convince them that's as big a threat to democracy as the attack on the mechanisms of it itself.
I mean, part of it sounds to me like, and I think it's part of our mission at Up North News as well, is to remind people that government can be and should be a force for good. And now we have to get even deeper, which I never thought we'd have to do in my lifetime. Democracy is good. You know, democracy is what you want, but that you also have to defend. What is the closing action that you're often seeking in these canvassing? I know with a candidate, it kind of comes down to, you know, can I count on your vote or something like that? What is it that you're ultimately looking for? Is it just information from that voter for future communications or some other course of action?
We do keep all the information, but we, unlike a lot of issue groups, we take sides in elections. We have what's called a 501c4. So we are actually trying to persuade them if it's an electoral canvas. We also did canvasses around things like Medicaid expansion. So there's an issue version when election is not live. So it's certainly both to vote and if it's a cross-pressured voter to vote for the candidate that would actually fight for climate change, guaranteed health care. Our two biggest issues, but it also can be because we're a membership organization with local chapters called organizing co-ops around the state. If they're really a live discussion, try to get them to join or at least talk to an organizer. I mean, a lot of times people aren't just ready to sign up, but they want to hear more or maybe become someone. Would you like our local organizer to give you a call? And they'd be like, sure. And then they're a call list for our organizers. So our canvases produce people who are not currently involved, because we have to, and we do this on the north side of Milwaukee with the Afro-Mickey, we go door to door because we need more people involved politically. We can't just keep fighting with other activist groups over the existing small set of people who are already active.
I feel like we're kind of moving people along, what do they call it, an action ladder or something like that. We're going to start with conversations and then potentially something in terms of, you know, involvement in some way, shape, more than what they're doing now, because either they think, you know, my vote doesn't count or my opinion doesn't count or whatever. So you're taking that conversation and turning it into a sense of empowerment for the, you know, the resident that you're talking to, as well as information. And it's not just, you know, solely Wisconsin issues, but it's Wisconsin impact on national issues. For example, Robert, you talk a bit about the domestic agenda of President Biden, which seems to get knocked around, which is odd for somebody who's accomplished so much. You have the American Rescue Plan, you have the bipartisan infrastructure bill, you have the first, you know, real effort at, you know, gun safety legislation in 3 decades. Yes, there are parts that are still hung up, but what is that? What is it that you're looking to help Wisconsin voters know about, you know, a president's domestic agenda and its impact on them?
Yeah, we work at all levels of trying to have government, federal, state, local. We do very local things as well, though we try to connect them up. Like our climate work is local, federal, and state, and they're connected, and school district level. But I, in terms of the federal level, and I wrote an article about this in the East Times Magazine that went out on Inauguration Day, a pretty lengthy article about the opportunity of the Biden administration. This is the first president in 50 years since Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was committed to a bold progressive agenda. The original Build Back Better domestic reforms were at the New Deal level. They were bolder than even the Great Society in the 1960s. It was not possible to pass the whole thing, as we learned in the process, because we didn't have enough votes in the U.S. Senate. We had two very conservative senators who could hold it up, Manchin and Sinema. But the problem is some people have gotten very jaded and disillusioned at all of the, at how long it took, you know, the Senate and House processes, especially the Senate, are not designed to inspire the public or for the public even be able to follow and understand. They're very anti-democratic, if you think about it, and elitist. But what finally was landed on last week, the Manchin, a surprise, because it looked dead, Manchin and Charles Schumer, the majority leader deal, is the most historic advance ever by far on climate. It changes the whole climate picture worldwide because it does put the U.S. on a path to cutting emissions by 40% by 2030. And we must absolutely do it 45%. So we need 5% more, which is a good reason to vote for the Biden agenda in this midterm election. But 40, that's huge. We were not going to do any of that. And runaway climate change is a threat to human civilization. And so it is really important people understand and mobilize around what's going to happen there. There's also great stuff on taxing corporations fairly and on healthcare that make healthcare more affordable, which is one of the top inflation issues, especially as gas prices begin to recede and to normalize a bit, at least for now.
All right. Robert Craig from Citizen Action is our guest for this hour. We're going to talk more about the issues that they are informing Wisconsin voters about when we come back from the other side of the break. Senator Tammy Baldwin will be our guest tomorrow in the 8 o'clock hour. In the 9 o'clock hour tomorrow, candidate for Congress Mark Newman. We've talked to three of the Democratic candidates in Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district. Mark is the 4th, and that is coming up as well. Right after, more after this break, this is Up North News.
Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Welcome back to Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. It is Wednesday morning, August 3rd. Robert Craig from Citizen Action is joining us to talk more about the group, the conversations being had with Wisconsin voters, and the issues that are really at play and important for these 97 days now before the November general election. Robert, you've described your work as fitting into three buckets. There's what you call movement politics, and then there's some specific issues, healthcare and climate. And then, of course, in the past, you've talked about economic equity as well. So let's talk a bit about some of these others. When we talk just about healthcare, and it certainly feels like people have been hearing for a decade about attempts to either repeal the Affordable Care Act or to bolster it and do things at the state level. So what kinds of things are you looking to do in the area of healthcare from a Citizen Action perspective?
So because we've been around for 39 years, we were the lead group on passing the ACA and back in 2009 through 2010. So we go way back on a lot of these issues. And I would just say on healthcare, the Affordable Care Act was an advance, right? It did create somewhere to go for a lot of people to get healthcare when they couldn't get it from work, because the work-based system doesn't work for a lot of people because so many jobs don't provide good health benefits, especially in rural areas. It's both an urban and a rural problem. So what we look at in healthcare is that the United States spends more per person by far than any country in the world, and yet we leave a lot of people uncovered, and we have a situation where it's the leading cause of bankruptcy, and people are avoiding care. We're doing a poll right now on this, actually, that's in the field. We do periodically with a national partner in Wisconsin. A lot of people are skipping care, skipping their prescription drug they need because they can't afford it. And these people are insured, most of them. So we have a system that is the reason it's so expensive and we don't have good access and it's not affordable is because we have allowed this for-profit health system to build up where windfall profits are the priority, not health. If you look at the big pharmaceutical companies with the power to prevent Medicare from negotiating for prescription drug prices, like every other advanced country in the world does, that changes, by the way, in the compromise Biden is getting through, hopefully in the next 2 weeks, we're going to start to negotiate, use Medicare to negotiate, but that's their power, health insurance industry. And then people need to pay attention to the consolidation in hospitals. The big hospital conglomerates, even if their structure is nonprofits, are operating in the same way. Anyone tried to figure out their bill will find that out, or to go back and forth between the insurance company and their hospital or their health system will find that out. And the result is extremely high prices, and it's unaffordable even for the insured. And so what we want to do is make progress towards shifting power away from the what we would call the medical industrial complex, all of those actors I talked about and more, medical device manufacturers or another, towards democracy, towards average people. And we need to structure this system so that healthcare is a fundamental right and everyone has access to it no matter what. We think that eventually leads to something like Medicare for All, but that's not going to pass right now. It's in steps. We believe in stepping stones. But it also means even a Medicare for All won't work, Pat, if we haven't broken up the monopolies, the healthcare monopolies, because we don't get good prices in military contracting because the Pentagon has to go to one supplier for this advanced weapon. And so that is what will happen to Medicare for All if we don't also break up the power of these monopolies and shift power to democracy, to the people.
And meanwhile, Senator Ron Johnson just yesterday appearing on the regular Joe show argued and they love to refer to these things as entitlements, as if, you know, people haven't paid in, you know, for all their working years. He wants to just tear it all down and says, his quote, well, Social Security and Medicare, if you qualify, you just get it no matter what the cost. We ought to turn everything into discretionary spending so it's all evaluated. Robert, if Ron Johnson were able to turn Medicare and Social Security, and I would have to assume veterans care and other things, into discretionary spending, what kind of a bloodbath would we see every year in the Capitol?
Oh, think about how hard it's been passed the Biden agenda, and imagine that constantly, or imagine the poison pills a Republican majority, which is now, you know, a proto-fascist majority. This is not the Republican Party of our parents and grandparents. What they would do at the state legislative level or at the federal level, this should not be a surprise. My concern would be that people would just see Ron Johnson as popping off, kind of the way some people saw Donald Trump, right? And not take it seriously. This was proposed by Rick Scott, the senator from Florida, who's chair of the Republican Senate Campaign Committee that to reelect to try to elect the Republican Senate. He had all programs, including Medicare and Social Security, sunsetting in 5 years and having to be reauthorized. And Ron Johnson was one of the few Republican U.S. senators that immediately embraced Rick Scott's vision. So this is not a surprise. Ron Johnson, if you have to pass it every year and you have any knowledge of how Congress works, and he's been in the Senate for 12 years, you'd have to know that you're jeopardizing those benefits. And the only rational conclusion here is Ron Johnson thinks billionaires should get huge tax cuts, he engineers, which is what our digital ad is about that you mentioned at the top of the show, but doesn't think we should have Medicare and Social Security. He wants to repeal the whole 20th century, Pat.
Exactly. And so, and he, of course, quickly tried somewhat to retreat and say, well, I didn't say I liked everything in the plan, but he won't, of course, say specifically what he outright opposes, which is a TASN endorsement. So Citizen Action is letting people know through this new digital ad that we're about to play. And if the voice sounds familiar at first, but you can't quite place it, this is Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who is talking about Ron Johnson's record. Luke, let's play that ad.
Senator Ron Johnson fights hard in Washington, D.C., but he's not fighting hard for us. Instead, he's fighting hard for his billionaire donors. Meet Richard E. Line and Diane Hendricks. These billionaires spent $20 million to get Ron Johnson reelected in 2016. And they got a total of $80 million in tax breaks after Ron Johnson carved out a little special loophole for them and himself.
Did my business benefit? Sure. Did some of my donor businesses? Sure.
This year, they're doing it all over again. Buying a U.S. senator? All it takes are a few big tax breaks for billionaires.
Oops, I think you're muted, Pat.
Yeah, it'd help if I unmuted that I muted during the commercial there. That is the new ad, a digital ad from Citizen Action. And again, I think that's quite a coup to get a fellow member of a state's congressional delegation. Although, again, you know, Gwen Moore and Ron Johnson, you probably can't get more polar opposite. And yet there's usually a hesitancy in the state. But I think this really says something about Ron Johnson's record, Robert, that you were able to make this ask of her and have her say yes.
Yeah, and it's partly that, you know, what she thinks of Ron Johnson, what kind of legislator Gwen Moore is. We've known her back to the state Senate. So I used to watch her in Joint Finance Committee in the middle of the night back in the day when all that was live. You had to be there. So it's that. It's also that part of our movement politics program is to develop co-governing relationships with legislators, with members of Congress. So we have that kind of a relationship with Congresswoman Moore, where we can even have that kind of conversation. And so the way it came down is we were brainstorming about this ad with a couple national partners. We was working coalition, so experts who were informing us. And I just occurred to me, you know, sometimes you have the brainstorm, you know, I wonder if Gwen Moore would do it. And they all get excited. So I asked her district director and she got excited and we made it happen. And so just texted her. So, but it's that kind of relationship where they trust us to look out for them, right? She wasn't going to do an ad that's a straight smear ad. And what that reporting is based on, that Ron Johnson held up the Trump tax cuts to make one more change that made $80 million for two Wisconsin billionaires, Diane Hendricks and Richard E. Line, and made money for him, Ron Johnson. He held the whole thing hostage, and he had gotten $20 million from them for the 2016, and they spent on him the 2016 election, and they're doing it again. They the headline we show is Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They both put in another $3.5 million so far into Ron Johnson's 2022 reelection.
And not just into Johnson directly, but those billionaires actually created
a
super PAC. And so when you see, I believe it's Wisconsin Truth PAC, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right, yeah.
When you see pro-Johnson ads, and if you see that that is, you know, the sponsor, that's not, you know, everyday, you know, folks thinking Ron Johnson's a great guy. That's a couple of billionaires spending some of the millions he saved them, millions that are not now going towards schools and roads and national defense and everything else. And it just smacks of an oligarchy almost, Robert, that you're fighting against.
It's no different than the paper bags full of money in the 19th century that fighting Bob La Follette rallied against, except it's a lot less money then. They were getting a few thousand dollars. Now folks are getting $20 million. I mean, this is accelerated. And just to give credit where credit is due to nonprofit media, this was reporting from ProPublica that broke the story. And they got a hold of internal IRS data, so they know what advantage the individual billionaires got. And so we know we wouldn't know, given how little transparency there is, how much it was worth to Diane Hendricks and Richard E. Line to make that change that Ron Johnson made, except for what ProPublica was able to uncover and report.
Right. And so that says a lot, coming back to where we started this conversation on the media ecosystem and why we need, people who are willing to do that kind of investigative work as well when politicians are not so forthcoming. Robert, in the short time we have left, I want to again come back to something we said at the beginning. There are a lot of groups out there, and that's a good thing, but it can also be a bit overwhelming. And so again, whether it's a single issue group or a single candidate or a party, somebody just wants to get involved, period. Obviously the short answer is they should go to citizenactionwi.org, but overall, if people just want to learn more about, you know, getting involved, what do you think they most need to know so that they know what that first step ought to be?
Yeah, there's our website, but there's also our Facebook page has a lot. So that's a way to get to know us. And people are very social media savvy these days and get a lot of news there, which is also kind of a curse. We are all over the state. We have organizing co-ops, our chapter system, that are centered in La Crosse and the Driftless area, Eau Claire and the surrounding Chippewa Valley area, and all the way to the Minnesota border, North Central Wisconsin, Wausau and the surrounding counties, Northeast Wisconsin, Green Bay, Appleton, Fox Valley, and the Milwaukee area, more than one. We also have an African-American-centered organizing co-op, Northside Rising. Our website has information on all of them. So if you're interested, you can just go to our website and have a conversation with one of our organizers. These are permanent people who live in these communities or from these communities. So I know you're on in Wausau, Pat. That's Joel Lewis, who is a very well-known lifelong resident of
Superman
County. Yeah. And is has been our organizer there since, I think, at least 5 or 6 years. And so he is not going anywhere. He was not parachuted in. He's never leaving this area, right? But we don't just try to win an election for people with D's at their name. We're trying to create champions who will then legislate with us. So we want a Mandela Barnes, and this is part of our endorsement process, to work us on climate change, economic and racial equity, the intersection between those two, because it's an opportunity to change the whole economy if we have to make it renewable and make it sustainable. And then on healthcare, and we also work on other issues. We're working on taxing billionaires and corporations fairly right now as well. So right. We are a multi-issue group. But if you want a local group where you have local people, but you have state and national impact, and you're actually contending for power where you could actually have policy wins and big electoral wins, Citizen Action is a very good option for you in Wisconsin.
Robert, this is the first of what I hope are many visits to get updates on what you're up to. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for what you're doing.
I appreciate it very much. We will wrap up this hour in just a moment.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Franklin.
Where there's 3/4 of an inch in the rain bucket alongside Lake Wissota after quite the light show overnight. What was it, about close to midnight? You know, being an older middle-aged man now, of course, I look at weather and weather wraps and radar all the time, and I see this big blob that's devouring Ladysmith and environs, and I'm like, well, okay, sucks to be you. But of course, you know, karma being what it is, I was dead asleep at 2:05 when the next blob came through and came right through here again with an amazing light show that thankfully, as far as I can tell, didn't do a lot of damage and brought at least a little bit of desperately needed rain to some areas. Luke, I don't know how many folks out there are, you know, more evolutionists versus creationists versus finding a middle ground, but I've always felt like, you know, we know there've been some wonderful advancements in evolution. There's a reason we have, you know, hair where we do and body hair, and the reason that we're, you know, we're walking upright and everything else. And yet there's a real lapse in evolution that all these many years later, since we crawled out of the primordial soup, some of us can only go a couple of decades before our knees are shot. It doesn't seem fair. And you, not even turning 30 yet, you punk, have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about.
Oh, I would love to do a deep dive on evolution and all of that with you, because sweat glands, I don't know if you know this, but sweat glands, scientists now believe, I listened to a TED talk, sweat glands are the reason why, like, the human race was the one that advanced beyond all of the other in the animal kingdom. So we can go on a deep dive on that, but let's go back to the knees. Mine feel fine this morning.
Sweat, the urine of the skin, as Sheldon Cooper would say, you know, on Big Bang Theory. Yep. So I told folks yesterday about how I, you know, had wrenched my knee. I already knew it was going bad, but did something terrible to it. And so went down to get it x-rayed. But of course, prior to that, I had to see a physical therapist who taught me how to walk with a cane. And I'm holding, this is not a cane, but my wife got a walking stick when she went to Machu Picchu many years ago. But check this out, Luke. I can unscrew the bottom, the tip here, which is a nice thick rubber tip for if you're walking. Look at the point on this thing. This is right out of Clue.
That's a weapon. You know? That's insane.
The murder was committed by Dr. Kreitlow in the home office against her husband with a walking stick. That is, I mean, again, I'm sure it's great for walking, but
it's an ice pick maybe for the winter months in
the ice maybe. Pick, sure, like Basic Instinct. Yeah, I get it. Well, so I thought, well, this is where we're going. Great. So they signed me up for an x-ray. And look, I obviously x-rays have their place. You know, it was very easy 100+ years ago or whatever to see a broken bone. But, you know, x-rays have their limit. And I kind of felt we were kind of fooling ourselves, but it's one of those necessary steps, as Robert referred to the medical industrial complex. You have to take each step. An MRI is probably the step that's going to show you what exactly inside your knee is, you know, going on. But of course, you have to start with the x-ray. So there we are. You know what that x-ray looked like, Luke?
It looked like a knee.
And so the orthopedist zooms way in, you know, on the laptop, you know, uses his fingertips and zooms way in. And if you zoom way in and you see something and he says, that's a bone spur. And for all I know, he's right. And for all I know, it's a speck of dust, you know, that was on the lens. But it was just enough for him to say, well, the next step would be a cortisone shot. And, you know, again, I am not a big fan of needles. I am picturing something, again, like the tip of this cane that, you know, has a full Phillips screwdriver at the end of it, something that thick being drilled in. He says, no, it's nothing like that. And, you know, he said we would drain some fluid off the knee and then you'd have the cortisone shot and try that for a while. And if it works, great. You've bought yourself some time. If it doesn't, well, then you get to advance to the next step on the game board and you get to go get the MRI. So I said, fine. So, you know, lay down, basically put my hands over my eyes because I'm a big man, baby. You can do anything in the dentist's office, the doctor's office, as long as I don't see the needle. I will give blood. I'm O negative. I'll give blood. But the one time I looked at that needle, man, I was out, just done. They were force feeding me peanut butter, crackers, and Kool-Aid to try to bring me back. There's just something about seeing it. So I didn't have to see the needle. Felt it go in. Of course, felt the nut. First, they numb it up, and you definitely feel that. And then you feel a little pressure. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And then a little bit more pressure. She says, okay, I've got the fluid out. No, we're putting the cortisone in. Okay, that's fine. And he says, okay, you can sit up now. At that point, he holds up the syringe. Now, when I think syringe, I mean, you're thinking of something like the width of a pen, right? This syringe is thicker than a roll of quarters and about the same length as a roll of quarters. And that's 40 milliliters. And it's full of this yellow fluid that he just sucked out of my body. And I screamed. I felt like, you know, that I was a middle school kid seeing, you know, a Korean pop group for the first time, like, what is this? And he says, no, this is perfectly normal. You have the most normal looking, you know, knee fluid I've ever seen. So, I mean, I can put that on my business card, you know,
that is an accolade.
Journalist, yeah. Bounding editor, normal knee fluid.
There you go. That is an accolade that you need to let the world know about.
Yeah. So he said, look, we drain this fluid off, you know, give it a chance. Says, give it 24 hours. Well, I'm glad he said, give it the 24 hours, because when I got up for that thunderstorm last night, the numbing, you know, agent had worn off and it actually hurt worse than it ever had previously. I thought, oh, this is a disaster. I'm going to be in an MRI by noon tomorrow. Go back to sleep, wake up this morning. And as I'm sure anybody, almost anybody who's had a cortisone shot can tell you, pain is gone. This is the first time I've been pain-free in 4 weeks. And it's a godsend. I don't know how long that's going to last. But the fact that now Luke has given me the idea that this baby can only be used on a block of ice now, instead of going for a walk, you know, somewhere along Lake Wissota, is music to my ears. So, Luke, I hope the 40 milliliters of yellow fluid didn't gross you out too much, but, you know, we had to start with a smoothie recipe somewhere along the line, and so that's where we're going.
I can share my bodily fluid story another time.
Well, and again, I'm married to an OBGYN, okay? And so I told her about this, and she's like, yeah, I don't get concerned about fluid till it's running off the operating table. Okay, you win, dear. But she was nevertheless mildly, happy for me. We're going to take a break. When we come back from our sister outlet in Michigan, we're going to hear about yesterday's primary election and more. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Crightwell.